So it's very nice to be able to talk to a whole group of volunteers, to people who have really stepped up to the plate, so to speak. Or in the States we say, put your money where your mouth is. In other words, we're trying to live out our values and principles and not just talk about them. So I want to thank you all for doing that, for being that group of people that really does that. It's quite wonderful. So I was asked tonight to talk a little bit about how to maintain that motivation, how to continue doing service work. So this is a very important topic in Singapore and also in my country, in the U.S. Buddhists in the U.S., many of them tend to be what we call socially engaged Buddhists or engaged Buddhists. In other words, they care about society, they are politically active, they are active in environmental causes, they are active in human rights issues, they are active in social welfare issues, in education and hospice and, you know, prison work, all sorts of things like that. So many Buddhists in the States, you know, feel that calling and feel that it's something that's quite important to do. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama really encourages us to be active in our society and to do something for the benefit of society. So what I see happening is lots of people have that kind heart that wants to reach out and do something to benefit society. And you do it for a while, you do some volunteer work for a while, and then after a while you go, I'm tired. You know, I'm tired. I work so hard, they don't even say thank you to me. You know, I put in all these years of work, I've done so much, the people I'm trying to help, they don't even say thank you. I don't know if I want to keep doing this. And it's so hard. There's so much bureaucracy, you know, you're trying to change the system, you're trying to make things better. And there's so much bureaucracy. You have to file this paper, and you have to do that report, and you're going around in circles, and it's just so tiresome. So in the States, there's an expression that people use when they reach that point in their volunteer work. It's called compassion fatigue. Okay, it used to be called burnout, but now it's been renamed compassion fatigue. Okay, so you're tired of being compassionate. And ego, self-centered mind, is sneaking up there saying, well, what about me? I'm such a nice person for doing all this work for the benefit of others. Aren't I a good person? Now what about me? You know, I need some ego perks. Yeah, you know when you have a good job, you get perks? Yeah, well, ego wants a perk from doing some service work, you know, like a little bit of praise or maybe a certificate or a present, yeah. Some gratitude. We want something, okay? So this is very, very natural in the process. It happens all the time to everybody, okay? So if it happens to you, you're not the only one, okay? This is a very, very common experience. So what do we do when this happens, you know? Because we started out with a very good motivation. Now, our initial motivation was we really care about people, we care about society, We feel that the volunteer work is interesting, that it's challenging, that there's space for our own creative energies. You know, we look forward to meeting new people and stretching our limits. And, you know, we really go into it with a lot of enthusiasm. And then midway, we're just kind of compassion fatigued, aren't we? Okay, so what do we do? I think this is where it's especially important to come back to our motivation, you know, and really generate that pure motivation again and again and again and again. Because it's so easy, you know, we generate the pure motivation at the beginning, and then it's easy just to take it for granted and not deliberately cultivate it afterwards. And if we do that, if we take our good motivation for granted, that's when self-centered mind starts sneaking in there and saying, I want some ego perks. Okay. So that's why, you know, to keep that from happening, we have to really think about our motivation repeatedly. And so one practice that I think is very, very valuable that I do myself is every day, first thing in the morning, is I generate my motivation. And not just, you know, for volunteer work, although my whole life is volunteer work. Okay. You guys think you do a lot of volunteer work. Try being a monastic. You know, your whole life is volunteer work. They call you at all hours of the day and night, and you're expected to be there. You know? And you don't charge any money. So, you know, you're free therapy, you're free everything. Anyway, I won't tell you my story. But, so this practice that I do, first thing in the morning, is generate my motivation. So I think, what's the most important thing to do today? Okay? Most important thing is not to harm anybody. Okay? Whatever I do, not to, you know, to try as much as possible not to say anything mean to somebody or about somebody, not to do anything that is harmful to others or myself. And third is not to think negative thoughts. In other words, not to let the judgmental mind run rampant. Okay, the judgmental opinionated mind. Because that will destroy us. So really making that determination first thing in the morning. Then second part of the motivation is to be of as much benefit to others as possible. And why benefit others? Because everything we have, everything we do, everything we know is due to the kindness of others. Okay? We came into this life, we didn't own a single thing. Everything we have is because other people gave it to us. You might say, well, I earned the money to buy it. Well, the money, where'd you get it from? Other people. Everything we know came from others. When we were born, we didn't even know how to talk. Yeah, we learned how to talk due to the kindness of others. We learn how to tie our shoelaces due to the kindness of others. Now, everything we know came because other people cared about us. Okay? Everything we use, you know, the microphone, the table, the watch, the cups, everything was made by others. The building we're in was made by others. And so really seeing that interconnection that we have with other living beings. And because that interconnection is so real, then having the determination to pay back their kindness, to benefit them in some way. So that's the second part of the motivation that we generate first thing in the morning. Third part of the motivation is to maintain this Bodhi mind, the bodhicitta, or the altruistic intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. Now you might say, well, I already made the determination not to harm them and to benefit them. Why do I have to generate this altruistic attention in addition to all of that? And the reason is because the altruistic intention has a really long perspective. It isn't just today that we're not going to harm and we're going to get benefit, but it's from now until we attain enlightenment. And even beyond that, because definitely when we attain enlightenment, we're not going to harm others and we're going to benefit them. So it's a very, very long-term motivation, this bodhicitta. And if you're able to generate that bodhicitta, even intellectually, even it's not yet our heartfelt feeling, but even intellectually you have some feeling for the value of attaining enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings, then that's going to give you the courage and the stamina and the strength to go from here all the way to enlightenment and to endure any kind of obstacle or challenge that comes up along the way by transforming that obstacle or challenge into an opportunity, into a way to develop our own qualities so we can practice the path. Okay, so this long-term motivation is incredibly important. Now, because otherwise it's easy to start out and then after a while, you know, we kind of fall apart. So we have to be very clear in our mind that we are in this for the long term, the long haul, okay? And that enables you to stay in it for the long term if you have that motivation, okay? So, what some of the things, you know, when we begin to think, well, do I really want to be in it for the long haul? Do I really want to do this? You know, enlightenment's kind of big. I don't really understand what it is. How do I know I want to do this? Okay, when you start having those kind of doubts, then what I find is very good to think about is, if I don't aim for full enlightenment and work for it, what else am I going to do? Yeah, when the mind starts complaining, oh, enlightenment's too high, the path is too difficult, I'm not qualified, then I say to myself, okay, what else do you want to do? Okay, what else do you want to do? You know, what else is the mind going to come up with? I want to go lay on the beach. Okay. You know, you think, okay, I'll go lay on the beach. Go lay on the beach. You come home with a sunburn. You know, what value was that? No. Okay, what else do you want to do if you don't become enlightened? Oh, I want to meet Prince Charming and fall in love with him forever and ever and ever. Okay, you start looking around for Prince Charming. Where is he? Where's his white horse? You know? And then you look around and you say, who else has met Prince Charming? Who else has a perfect, fantastic relationship? Yeah? You know anybody with a perfect, fantastic, romantic relationship? Name one couple. I dare you. Yeah? You can't find, you know? You fall in love and then, you know, you get along to some extent or another, and you also quarrel, don't you? You know, Prince Charming gets off his white horse, and you wish he'd pick up the vacuum cleaner and help with the housework, and he doesn't. Okay. So then you start having second doubts about him. Yeah. So, you know, what else are you going to do? Well, Prince Charming isn't the key to, you know, all happiness. Then we say, oh, well, I'll make a lot of money. That's what I'll do. I'll quit my volunteer work and I'll make a lot of money so I can give it to Dharma organizations. That's, you know, that's the real ego hook, you know? I'm going to go make a lot of money so I can give it to Dharma. The people who say that, I wonder how much they actually offer to the Dharma. Because somehow when we start making a lot of money, we start having a lot of doubts about giving it away. You know, it's like, well, I worked so hard to make this, and I still don't have enough. I still don't have financial security. No, why should I give my money away? I need it. I want it. I deserve it. I earned it. Okay. But what happiness is having a lot of money going to give you? Yeah? So when you die, you have a lot of money? Can a lot of money keep you from dying? No. When you die, does it matter if you're in a beautiful bed or in the gutter? Doesn't matter at all, does it? When you're dead, you're dead. So, you know, money is brings some comfort. You need it in society. But it's not going to give you everlasting happiness. So, you know. Okay. So what I'm saying is, when the mind starts to have a lot of doubts of, you know, do I really want this long-term motivation for full enlightenment, then really start asking yourself, what else am I going to do? If I don't work for enlightenment, name something better to do. And when you consider that from a Buddhist perspective, because we believe in rebirth, that we've had infinite beginningless lifetimes. Think about that. Infinite lifetimes. So they say that in samsara, in cyclic existence, we've been born as everything. We've done everything. In the States, we have the expression, been there, done that, got the t-shirt. So you know how you go different places, you collect a t-shirt as a souvenir? So in all of cyclic existence, we've been everywhere, we've done everything, and we have an infinite closet full of t-shirts. Okay. What has it gotten us? We're still in cyclic existence, aren't we? We still haven't reached enlightenment. So if we don't aim for enlightenment, if we instead start looking for samsaric pleasures, for ego's comfort, we're just going to be in the same situation we are in now, and probably one that's even worse. Yeah. So aside for aiming for enlightenment, I mean, there's nothing really else of value if you consider that we've been there and done everything else. Okay. So let's try to do something really new this lifetime and work for the benefit of sentient beings and try and increase our wisdom so we can get out of cyclic existence and help others out as well. Okay. So thinking like this really makes our motivation very, very strong. No? And it helps us go for a long term. Some other things that I find helpful, you know, for keeping that long-term motivation is I think of the kindness that I've received from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Okay. Because you know how our mind, when we do volunteer work, we start going, well, I did this for that person, and I did this for this one, and I helped that person, and I helped that one. And we have our whole list of how much good work we've done. And then we say, but what about me? You know, and all those people I've helped, you know, they don't say thank you. We begin to, you know, have a little bit of self-pity here. Poor me. Yeah. And so when my mind starts doing that, then I start thinking, well, what have the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas had to go through to teach me? And I look at the kind of disciple I am, you know, full of ignorance, full of attachment, full of anger, very arrogant, easily get jealous. And yet my teachers don't kind of look at me and go, Tupton Chidrin, hopeless case, you know. Been trying to help her since beginningless time, hopeless, you know. My teachers don't do that. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas don't do that. You know, we do all sorts of incredibly stupid things, and they don't give up on us, do they? You know, they keep on trying to help us. Isn't that amazing? You know? I mean, when you think of, for example, you know, I started learning Buddhism back in 1975. That's when I attended my first Dharma course. So some time ago I went and I looked back at some of the teachings that, you know, I had then. And then I was looking at some of the teachings that my teacher was also giving now, you know, 25, 30 years later. My teacher's saying the exact same thing as 30 years ago. Why? Because we still haven't gotten it yet. You know? I mean, our teachers are still saying even elementary Buddhism, like don't lie and don't talk behind people's back and, you know, don't criticize people and lose your temper. And they've been saying it to us for 30 years, and what do? We leave the Dharma hall, we lie, we talk behind people's backs, we criticize them, we ridicule them. We do the exact opposite of what our teachers have been teaching us. But do our teachers give up on us? No. They keep on saying it, thinking maybe one day she'll get it, you know. And then you look at your own mind and yeah, there is some progress after 30 years. There's some progress. I'm not a Buddha yet, but I'm not as bad as I was. Okay. So, you know, here are the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas working flat out trying to help us. And there's a little bit of progress. So they don't just kind of shake their hands and throw us in the trash can and say that we're, you know, hopeless cases. But they still keep teaching us and trying and encouraging and supporting and inspiring us. So when I think about what the holy beings have done for me, then how can I walk out on other sentient beings? Now, when I've been the recipient of so much kindness, not only from sentient beings, but from holy beings, how can I just say people don't appreciate me enough, and so I'm going to stop helping them? How can I say that? When we really look at our lives, we've received so much from so many people, ordinary beings, holy beings. Now, so if they have had the courage and the fortitude and the strength to hang in there with us, then we have to develop that same courage and fortitude and strength and hang in there and help others. And that's really, really important when we think about it.